2020. It is Boxing Day. I guess that is when people go out and do a lot of shopping, or at least it has been in the past. This year has certainly been a very different year for everybody worldwide. This is Deanna Spingola, and it is Spingola Speaks, the name of my program. And I'm broadcasting, as always, from the Chicago suburbs. And I'm really glad that you joined me today at republicbroadcasting.org. And it is a website for people who can handle the truth. And in the past, if you have been a contributor, a monthly contributor, I would suggest that you either become a contributor or increase your contribution per month, because it is one of the few places where you can really listen to people, hosts as well as guests, so you can find out what's going on. We have a lot of hosts on the network that bring a lot of wonderful guests to the network. And so I really do hope that you will be supportive and reevaluate your subscription. If you don't have one, get one. If you have one, increase the amount of money that you give each and every month. Anyway, in addition to that, I hope you will also subscribe to SpingolaSpeaks.net, which is a website that is managed by a wonderful person, a good friend, and he manages that website, puts up all kinds of wonderful things, including a copy of the archives. It's just a fabulous website, so please do visit SpingolaSpeaks.net. Also, ScreeningSandyHook.net, where you will find the life story of each and every one of the 26 victims that perished 8 years ago. And I know that there were a lot of people that came out and said, oh, no, that didn't happen, oh, blah. It didn't happen within 12 hours. Within 12 hours, they were making this this claim. And it had the function of attempting to destroy the alternative media, which is not a good thing, because the alternative media is a very important faction. It's a very important opportunity that we have. And we can talk to wonderful people. And my guest today is one of those people. And we had him on the program a few months ago. But he has a brand new book that we would like to introduce you to, that he would like to talk about. And if you have questions during the interview, you may email those questions to comment@spingola.email, or you can visit the chat room at spingola.chatango.com. My guest today for the first hour is Greg Felton. He is the author of Exploding Middle East Myths, 15 Years of Fighting Zionist Propaganda, and The Host and the Parasite. I interviewed him in August. 2011 was the first time I ever interviewed. And he is on Twitter. Hope that you will follow him there. I'm there too. Hope you'll follow me. I tweet a lot of tweets. I didn't used to participate in social media, but I find that it's a good outlet. Anyway, Greg, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Deanna. Good to be back.
Well, thank you. And your new book, it's very small, but it's very fat-filled. And the name of the book, SARS-CoV-2, Contagion, Collusion, Corruption. It's and it was just published, and you can purchase it. It's published by Turning the Tide Publishing, and it's a must-read book. And I'm sure that you agree, right, Greg?
Oh, I couldn't agree more.
Okay, so just the whole idea of the catching something from bats, and it's just kind of unusual. And as I was going through the book and reading about, first of all, the open air markets and the markets in China, which I visited, are just amazing. They have all these. When you buy meat in China, it is pretty fresh. It is so fresh, yeah, that they slaughter the animal or the eel or whatever it is that you're purchasing right there. So you know that that you're getting something really fresh. Anyway, so your chapter one is genetic fallacy. So talk to us how something supposedly from an animal finds its way into a human being.
Well, the term genetic fallacy is actually a pun.
I know.
The problem with the claim that the virus came from the wet market in Hunan, the Hunan fresh or wet market, is based upon the notion that somehow bats were there. Somehow those bats bit a human, and that human transmitted the disease. But this was never possible because bats weren't being sold there. The whole bat argument is a very badly contrived cover story. Now, it is true that coronaviruses originate in bats. At least some of them do.
Mm-hmm.
And it is true that bats can give coronaviruses. However, this particular one that we have now could not possibly have come from a bat because it's genetically incompatible with the bat. Essentially, the genome that was manufactured to give the illusion of bat origin was fabricated out of whole cloth. And so when you talk about a genetic fallacy, the fallacy lies in the fact that there is no genetic connection between SARS-CoV-2 and a bat. And the claim that the natural origin theory is sound is based upon an utter rejection of any other possible theory. And if it's not natural, then it has to be man-made. And if it's man-made, then it had to be made somewhere. And if it was made somewhere, somebody somewhere had to be responsible. And that's something that cannot be admitted. So this whole notion of the market being the source of the disease, which the Chinese themselves no longer believe, is utter bunk. And the tragedy is that you go into the summer and fall of this year, you are still seeing Western media like NBC and PBS treating the wet market theory as if it were defensible. And the great virus, really, that is affecting us is not only the one from SARS-CoV-2, but it's the intellectual virus that is inhibiting our ability to have our own intellectual antibodies protect us from dishonest reporting. And that's the virus that's killing the scientific community right now.
Right. The other thing, too, is that the lab that was involved or allegedly involved, isn't that owned by someone here, a company here in the United States?
Well, I don't know that it's owned by it. I mean, the Wuhan Level 4 laboratory, this was built with French money and French expertise, except toward the end of the construction, the French were muscled out of it and essentially derived no scientific benefit from it. Essentially, the Chinese really cheated the French, because the French from Lyon, where there is a laboratory, level 4 laboratory, were the ones asked to help build this. I don't think any Americans built the lab. I mean, there may have been consultants, but I mean, the research itself at the lab was funded by Americans. That is true.
Right. Okay. And which specifically, which Americans were involved in that?
Anybody we know? Oh yes. I mean, the guy that simply turned 81 recently was involved. Anthony Fauci.
Right.
He's head of the NIAID. He's in the Department of Health and Human Services. He's on the board of the National Institutes of Health. He's up to his eyes in drug research and viruses. And what happened is that Fauci managed to give funding via a third party to help fund research at the Wuhan lab. And the third party is Echo Health Alliance, which has a wonderfully innocuous, even positive sounding name, run by a man named Peter Daszak, Daszak. And he has been partners with Wuhan coronavirus researchers, particularly Dr. Shizheng Li, for years. And he helped funnel money into Wuhan for this kind of research. Now, the irony is that in, I think it was October or August, 2014, October, Barack Obama issued a moratorium on all what is known as gain-of-function research. And really, this is the core of my book. Gain-of-function research is a morally dubious practice whereby scientists take viruses and deliberately make them more contagious and lethal, especially to humans. The thinking behind this is that if a scientist can make the world's deadliest virus, well, that scientist can help develop a vaccine and protect society in case this virus ever gets out.
Right.
Which is a bit like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
It's like giving a bunch of pyromaniacs and arsonists torches and incendiary devices and telling them to go down, set fire to a city just to make sure the fire department can put it out. I mean, the damage is already done, isn't it?
Right.
And so what happened with SARS is that Daszak funneled money to Shizheng Li in violation of the spirit, if not the law, of Barack Obama's moratorium. I mean, he put a ban on new funding for gain-of-function research because there had been leaks from the CDC, and there had been a concern about University of Madison, Wisconsin, having research into the H5N1 avian flu virus, which has a lethality rate of 50%.
Wow.
It's very dangerous. Why anybody was monkeying with that in the United States defies rational description. But anyway, at least the two people involved agreed to put a moratorium on it, at least for a year. However, because of that and the CDC leaks, Obama said this is too dangerous, and especially since Fort Detrick, which is the U.S. Emirates home base, it leaks like a sieve.
Right.
And so it's just too dangerous to have Americans exposed to potentially lethal viruses in the name of some rather misbegotten notion of what science ought to do. So what do the Americans do? Well, let's send it offshore. Let's let the Chinese take the risk. Let's let the Chinese do the dirty work.
And get the blame.
Well, the blame is something else again. But at least in 2015, Wuhan decided, hey, let's start doing this. The Wuhan's BioLevel Safety 4 lab opened in 2015, right on the heels almost of Obama's moratorium.
Wow.
Now, is that a coincidence? Yes. I think not.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Now, I'm no fan of Rudy Giuliani. I mean, I think he should be charged with obstruction and the World Trade Center implosion.
Absolutely he should, for the cover-up and everything else. Yes, absolutely.
But he did say one thing that was very interesting. He said that America was in the middle of a virus that was made in China and paid for by American dollars.
A slip of the tongue?
Yeah, this is an interesting observation. As I say, I'm no fan of Giuliani's, but this is accurate. If it weren't for American funding, it's quite likely, I can't say for an absolute certainty, but it's quite likely that we would not have this virus today.
Right.
So in as much as the virus originated in Wuhan, China, the Chinese are not uniquely responsible for this. The Americans have to share some blame.
A lot of blame.
A lot of blame, yeah. Well, there's a lot of blame that comes also from North Carolina, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where Ralph Barrick is a professor. This is one of the places where some of the original disease was created and sent over to Wuhan. So there are lots of universities in the United States that are involved in gain-of-function research and are involved in perpetuating it.
Right, and some of those universities are taxpayer-funded.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, the taxpayers are on the hook for all of this. yeah, this is great. You co-opt your own people into poisoning themselves.
Right.
Sounds rather disastrous, doesn't it?
Right, yes, it is. Very devious. And what happens is that the taxpayers fund it, and then when the university stumbles upon something, then they privatize it and give it to corporations.
Yeah, this is unfortunately, going back to the origins of the American Republic, there has been a rather unenlightened attitude toward public spending, or the belief that private enterprise is almost morally virtuous. I mean, it's truly sad. You go back to you go back to the likes of Andrew Jackson and James Monroe and these presidents who engaged in the most irresponsible monetary policy because they
absolutely
felt that public spending in the national interest was a violation of the Constitution and an encroachment on states' rights, which is an unfortunate problem because the states' rights movement is of questionable validity in some cases. At any rate, that's a little bit off topic.
Right, right.
But the American public is on the hook for a lot of this, and a lot of the American public has no idea what happened or what is going on. They're basically told a very convenient lie, and it's a lie that really is effective because it has the value of giving people comfort. I mean, you think about it. Would you rather be told that scientists are working to help find a cure for a natural virus that escaped from a bat in Yunnan province and now is infecting the world? Or would you rather believe that a bunch of very smart, stupid scientists were monkeying around with nature and committed an accident, let this virus out of a laboratory, and are directly responsible for it?
I think most Americans would like to believe something good. They really don't want to think that the people in leadership positions would be so devious as to do these things. However, the reason that a lot of them are in leadership positions is because they've stabbed other people in the back to get to where they're at. So, yeah, it's pretty bad. It really is. They frame things that, oh, we're here to help. We're from the government and we're here to help.
Yes, it does. But here's the problem. It all comes down to responsibility and accountability.
Right.
And
right.
Nobody wants to be accountable for this.
Right. All righty. We are going to a break. We will return with our guest, Greg Felton. Be right back.
It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good.
All righty, we are back with our first guest today, Greg Felton. That's F-E-L-T-O-N. And his website is gregfelton.com. His book is available from MoneyTreePublishing.com. That's a lovely name, Money Tree Publishing.
Actually, this one, Money Tree Publishing, is the publishing, the imprint for The Host and the Parasite in Exploding Middle East Myths.
Right.
The SARS book is on Turning the Tide Publishing.
Turning the Tide Publishing. Okay.
Yeah, there are two imprints from the same publisher.
Right. Turning the Tide Publishing is a cool name, too. We have a very creative individual that's running this, right?
Yes, indeed.
Oh, it's a great friend. Okay, we were talking about some of the, we were talking about the vaccines and that people are waiting for this vaccine to become available so they can be safe. And I think, my gosh, why would anybody want to inject their body with something that was developed by the same people who, of course, a lot of people don't know this. A lot of people get all their information from the television and they have no clue that, they don't have, they're clueless. It's very sad, but.
Well, the thing is, the vaccines intrinsically aren't bad. I mean, there are some very good vaccines that have kept us safe from smallpox, diphtheria, mumps, measles, rubella, whooping cough, polio. And these have all been tested, and they're safe, and they are healthy. The difference here is that the vaccines
ding,
that
ding, ding,
are...
Ding, 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 ding.
I'm sorry, but you really can't disagree with that, because they have kept us safe from smallpox, polio, diphtheria, and so forth.
Okay.
But these ones are different because they've not been tested. They are designed to make the human body generate the antigens of the virus to encourage antibodies to develop. Now, you might think that would be a good idea, but what happens in the case of SARS and MERS is that you have a side effect called ADE, antibody dependent enhancement, which means if you happen to get the same disease again, you will get it much more, you'll have a much more severe outbreak because your body is going to be recognized as the source of the bacterium, which means a lot of people could well get autoimmune diseases because of this virus, this vaccine, because the vaccine is doing something that ordinary vaccines do not do. Because you should not have your own body turn into a, it should not be a red light to say, here, please attack me, antibodies. That is the possible danger of this. And it is disturbing that someone like Pfizer got put on the fast-track approval by the Food and Drug Administration to develop a virus, sorry, a vaccine, both begin with V, develop a vaccine without FDA having any knowledge of what this company was doing. It was just rushed through. There was a stampede for this vaccine. Now, it may, in fact, be fine. It may work. I don't know. But then nobody knows. And that is the problem. People are doing things that are unsafe, and they're treating the world like a glorified guinea pig. And you can't treat people like guinea pigs without their consent. Now, people are being stampeded into these vaccines, and it's not even clear the vaccine will work. I mean, the death rate from SARS-CoV-2, or the COVID-19 bacterium, the COVID-19 disease, is less than 1%. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't, you know, take precautions or prevent it. Of course not. But you're trying to prevent people from getting a disease that may be out there to such a degree that you can't. I mean, you're going to be injecting people who are otherwise healthy with a vaccine that could cause them serious harm. And this is madness. Look, if you want to determine if you're infectious with this disease and you're forced to take what's called a PCR test, which stands for a polymerase chain reaction, the result does not necessarily mean anything. What happens is you get a sample of virus from your body, it's put through a heating and cooling, a series of heating and cooling stages, at the end of which it will show up on a test. Now, if you have to generate more than 34 cycles or repetitions of this process to have your virus show up on a test, you're pretty much uninfectious. You probably have dead virus in you. It's not even a live virus. And this is something that Fauci admitted. A lot of these laboratories are giving these PCR tests. And if they say person is positive, there is no distinction made, or at least it's not clear there's a distinction made, between a PCR test that shows a genuine infectiousness and one that shows virtually no infectiousness. And that's why the reports we're getting from governments are not really useful.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
Okay, sure. I don't know either. I've had Skype problems or Zoom problems, but I heard that audio from your promo, so I'm connected to the station. So I don't know what's going on. Can you hear me fine? Okay. Okay, yeah, sure. So, in other words, I'm live right now, am I? Okay, so what I can say is that the virus, as it is, may the vaccines are not proven yet. So I'm just wondering how many people are risking their lives in the name of a panic. I mean, it looks to me, having seen the Canadian government or the American government endorse a vaccine and praise the people for being the first to take it, I just don't know if these governments really have any idea what they're doing. I mean, are they defaulting to the maximalist safe position? It would seem so, because I just don't see any rational understanding of whether this is good for the public or not. I mean, the people who are going to make the most of this are the drug companies, who are going to charge an arm and a leg for this disease, this vaccine. I mean, Pfizer has already set up over a billion dollar contract with the American government. And Canada has endorsed the Moderna version of the vaccine. But I just would say I would caution people in this instance not to get it. Unless you feel that you are genuinely contagious and have a PCR number that is below 30. Now, if you have a PCR test and it shows that you have the virus, you have to ask what your CT score was, your cyclic threshold. If the threshold is below 35, well, is over 34, let's say, then you're not contagious and you should be given a clean bill of health. Even people who are asymptomatic are not contagious, and yet they would be, but they would still think that they would need the vaccine. And what's even more hideous is that there may be cases where a company might mandate that their, all their employees be vaccinated, or travel might be restricted to only to vaccinated passengers, in which case there would be a massive public coercion to be vaccinated, possibly against people's own better judgment. This is tyranny of the worst sort. And as I said earlier, this is not the same as the childhood vaccines that are structured very differently, that are designed to attack an invading virus. These are, those vaccines do not turn your body into a, an alarm system for your antibodies. There's a big difference. And this is the one vaccine people should not get, not get. What's interesting about this particular vaccine is that it could not possibly have come from nature. So I think before any vaccine is created, we need to have a proper understanding of how SARS-CoV-2 came about. And in my book, I show at least one fellow named Birger Sorensen, who led a, he's a Norwegian, who led a team of three people investigating the etiology or the origin of SARS-CoV-2. And they came to the conclusion that it had been created with some genomic sequences from the HIV virus. Now, in as much as the HIV virus is very slow acting, it does not seem to be compatible with a major outbreak. But one of those inserts, as a team of Indian scientists found out, has what is known as the furin cleavage site. Now, to make that easy to understand for the general public, it had a series of four amino acids that tells your body, we need to cut this protein, the viral protein, to make it active. And this particular enzyme, known as furin, is found throughout the human body in various organs, particularly the lungs, the liver, the intestines, and the kidneys. And when the furin, when furin sees the SARS-CoV-2 virus, it'll cut it, activate it, and that's what will cause the COVID-19 disease. This particular sequence, this furin cleavage sequence, is not found in SARS. It is not found in what are called the lineage B coronaviruses. The family of coronaviruses to which SARS belongs does not have a furin cleavage site. MERS does, but that's a different subfamily and is not related at all to this particular problem.
Wow. I took a little brief break. My internet went totally down. My telephone is connected to the, and everything was down. And I, there was nothing I could do to get it back. But so I rebooted my computer and, That was a terrible feeling. I'm glad you kept talking.
Well, thank you. Your producer let me know what was going on.
Oh, thank goodness. Yeah, all of a sudden, nothing was going on. I thought, gosh, what did I say?
Somebody didn't like it. No, I just want to finish up my thought is that because of this furin cleavage site, it had to be inserted manually. It could not have come from nature, at least not so quickly. I mean, SARS has only been... SARS was 2003-2004. Now, this is only 2020. And that's only 7 years in the grand scheme... Sorry, 17 years in the grand scheme of things. And mutations do not happen that quickly. And what is the icing on the cake is that two of these amino acids are arginine. It's one of the 20 amino acids.
Right.
And arginine can be created by a grouping of three nucleotides, and there are four possible, there are about three or four possibilities. The particular grouping of nucleotides that makes these arginines part of the furin cleavage site are very rare, and they're there are two of them back to back. So it's quite unlikely that randomness in nature would have created two of these very rare arginines back to back. If anybody wants to argue a natural origin theory, they have to address the implausibility of their own arguments. And they have to address the fact that a lab origin theory is far more likely, especially since China and the United States have a long history of laboratory leaks of toxic elements.
Indeed. I mean,
it just makes sense.
Right. Oh, my gosh. This whole situation is just, who would have thought that this, that we would be looking at the year 2020 and all of the things that have occurred, the lockdowns. It isn't just a vaccine situation or a SARS situation. It is a situation where this event or this so-called disease, this illness, has destroyed the economy, shut down small businesses, house arrest, people have lost their jobs, the suicide rates. There have been more suicides than probably would have been if there was an actual disease that was killing people. There have been more suicides and domestic abuse cases than deaths by COVID.
Yeah, but the problem is how we've reacted to it is particularly unfortunate. But the problem is people simply don't know. I mean, right. You have this disease, and what do? You're a government leader. You've been warned that there's some sort of infection coming, and there is no cure for it, and it kills people. What do? Well, you panic. You take the maximalist position. But at some point, you have to recognize that you really don't know what you're doing, that you need to have people to give you advice who do know what's going on and act accordingly. There's a school of thought, and I think it's an intelligent one, that says we should stop worrying about isolating ourselves and wearing masks and staying home and just accepting the fact that we have this virus and try to live with it.
Right.
And so I mean, this is very difficult to recommend to somebody who's come down with COVID-19. And so I'm not here to say that people who stay home are essentially irrational or they're idiotic. They're not.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that some of the government's overreaction is a sign of political impotence.
Right.
And the admission they don't know what's going on. And so I'd like to see some sort of reason reappear in our approach to dealing with this particular problem. And when you consider that there has been no proof, no scientific proof, that mask wearing is really going to help you at all.
Right, and Fauci has said so. In one interview, he said that it is not essential, that it doesn't do any good. In fact, it's very destructive to the immune system. You're breathing in your own CO2, so it's very dangerous. And then in another interview, he said, yes, you should wear a mask. So he's on record for both positions.
Yeah, I have trouble taking Fauci at face value, actually.
Well, his record with the AIDS virus and all the other history that he has engaged in, if one looks at the history, his history, why would anybody trust this man?
Well, you're supposed to trust people in authority, yet the people in authority have not well earned our trust. And what you mentioned about changing positions, there is something interesting about the way that the virus has been reported. And this is one of the main purposes of my book, is not to make a scientific argument. I'm not a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't claim to make a scientific argument or a book based solely on that. I look at the way the media has reported on this, and there is without doubt prima facie proof that there has been a cover-up and sabotage of points of view that challenge the natural origin theory. Now, in my book, you've read my book, and you know that there's a place in one of the chapters, I think it's called Chimeric Virus, where we have Forbes magazine running an article by about Birger Sorensen, and Sorensen comes up with the notion that this is a that HIV has been spliced into
the spot. Yes.
Now this came out on going to get the date here, June the 7th of this year. Originally, the title was Norway Scientist Claims Report Proves Coronavirus Was Lab-Made. So, this is Forbes, a business magazine, writing a piece about Birger Sorensen's proof or evidence, he believes, that this was a lab-made virus. That same day, a second version of the story came out under a different headline. Controversial coronavirus lab origin claim dismissed by experts. So what? You interview a guy, then you sabotage it by putting up a different headline that you had originally?
Oh, right. They do it. So it's not just Fauci that does it. It's,
no, because Forbes actually misrepresented Birger Sorensen.
I got to send you a I'm going to Skype you a Vicks cough drop.
No, it's okay. Sorry about that. No. I thought I covered up my microphone. Originally, the study from Sorensen and Dahl said that the spike protein contained sequences that appeared to be artificially inserted.
Right.
The edited version said, claim that the spike, coronavirus spike contained sequences. So we have show that becomes claim. So another, there's another one that said Richard Dearlove, who was head of MI6 from 1999 to 2004, said that the pandemic that paralyzes the world may have started in a lab.
Right.
The new version that was re-edited said, however, intelligence sources from Britain's MI5 dismissed the idea as rumor and conspiracy.
Right. So that's on page 41.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So anytime you have somebody using the term rumor and conspiracy, you know they're not being honest because they're trying to dismiss the subject ad hominem without dealing with the substance of it.
Right.
But why on earth would Forbes do something so reckless as to damage its reputation by superimposing a different article over an original that does the opposite of what the original was meant to do?
Right.
Then there's the case of the Indian scientists who demonstrated that there was a HIV sequence, four HIV sequences. They were vilified. They pulled their research to check it to make sure they were right, and they were right, but they couldn't get their finding republished. In fact, there's nobody in the main, in the, except for some people like Alina Chan out of MIT. There aren't many people who are actively pursuing the lab origin theory. And this is rather unfortunate because we're being forced to accept a contrived consensus. There is no consensus on this.
It's contrived, as you say.
And what shows me how rather disreputable the scientific community is... is that we hear music in the background.
Right, which means that means we're going to a break, and we will be right back. You know, the way to avoid COVID is to turn off your television. then you won't catch it. Okay, we'll be right back. All righty, we are back with our first guest, Greg Felton. And his book is SARS-CoV-2, Contagion, Collusion, Corruption, and it is published by Turning the Tide Publishing. Anyway, we were talking about some of the things that people hear on the TV, where one newscast kind of obliterates the previous newscast on the very same people. So you have various versions of things, and it's very difficult, I'm sure, for people to know what to think or to believe.
Well, so the problem is that there's no real debate. I mean, it's a sort of conformity. And if you want to challenge something, you want to discuss it, it's very hard to find a dissenting opinion. And that's what really concerns me. Like, I have no trouble with people taking precautions. They should take precautions. But I get the feeling that we're being forced to internalize a pre-established harmony that is not necessarily accurate. And without debate, without discussion or analysis or proper PCR reporting in all cases, very little of what is told can be accepted as accurate. And this is what concerns me. We were fetishizing, we're obsessing over every COVID death, and we're creating a culture of paranoia.
Every alleged COVID death.
No, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go into alleged, because you can't say that unless you've actually done the analysis. Now, my wife who works in a hospital knows they have a whole COVID ICU ward. So this is nothing. This is not an imaginary disease. This is a real disease, but we're obsessing over it to a degree that may be unhealthy in other ways. And so what I want to point out is that people need to know this is not a natural disease. This is a disease that was made by man, by people in a laboratory. It leaked from a lab, and I don't think it was a deliberate leak, because I cannot imagine a scenario whereby China would want to infect the whole world, which has nothing better to do than buy the crap it produces from its factories. I just don't understand any logical argument for that. I can accept the fact that it was done carelessly, or it was done accidentally, because we know that there have been leaks through in Beijing. I believe in my book said it was 2004. There were two leaks from Beijing. On page 40, April 2004, right. An accidental SARS leak from the Chinese Institute of Virology. The American government was so upset, they sent a fact-finding team over to determine whether it was safe. I mean, the Chinese do not have a great track record of lab safety. Mm. I mean, there were even laboratory animals who, after being tortured for the purposes of human betterment, were sold in the wet market for human consumption.
Oh my gosh.
Why would anybody even think to do this? So the idea that somehow the virus could have escaped from the Wuhan lab is perfectly plausible. But we have people who get freakishly defensive and simply deny the possibility that it could have happened. Well, that tells me that they're hiding something, that they're lying. And when that happens, I have to question what's going on here. There is more to this virus than meets the eye or any other part of your body.
We're out of time. Well,
yes, I'm afraid so. I should come back and work with them when the Skype is working better.
Yes, that was terrible. I'm sorry about that, but you're a trooper, and you just carried on without me. So congratulations. Thank you for doing that.
I've always wanted to have my own radio show.
Well, you had it
today. For a while, I did.
That was your audition. Thank you so much, Greg.
You're welcome, Dan.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, we'll be right back with our next guest.